Hi, my name is Sam Blizzard. Welcome to Comms from the Shed, the interview show where you get to hear from a range of diverse and interesting voices on how they've coped during the global pandemic. In this series, we'll be taking an informal look at life, talking to people who've been doing incredible things, and asking them about their hopes for the future in both their personal and professional lives. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks for tuning in to our Comms from the Shed Career Change Special podcast. In part one, we talked to Andrew McCaskill of Executive Career Jump. And today we are joined by Katie Kelleher, Anthony Antunes, and Kevin Mears. After a number of years working in sales and recruitment, Katie had a change of career when she retrained as a crane driver for Select Plant Hire and Langer Roark. Through social media, she helped to change the face of construction, encouraging more apprentices and women into the field. She was named one of LinkedIn's top voices in 2019 and has worked on construction projects such as Crossrail and the Thames Tideway Tunnel. Anthony is an actor, puppeteer and physical theatre performer whose credits include Warhorse at the National Theatre, The Magic Flute at the English National Opera, Cirque du Soleil, Dirty Dancing, Secret Cinema and CBeebies. Kevin Mears has worked in digital communications for over a decade and is currently Head of Social and Community at Acamar Films, where he looks after social media channels for the children's TV show Bing. He is also a scriptwriter and producer of award-winning short films and documentaries. His latest, The Announcement, won Best Comedy at the Montreal Independent Film Festival in September 2020. He was also shortlisted for the BBC Writers' Prize in 2013. Welcome, everyone, to Comms from the Shed. I think all three of you are known for having more than one string to your bow, but can you remember how you felt when you were thinking about changing career for the first time?
It's funny you say when I was thinking about it. I think it's one of them things that I was always thinking about, and I was always trying to change career and try and reinvent myself and try and do something different. I had quite a few different sales jobs, and in between them, I was always trying to do something different. Could I do that? Could someone train me to do that? And it kind of came about, eventually I ended up in recruitment and I was working on trades and labour. So I was putting out painters, bricklayers, carpenters. And I didn't want to work in sales anymore. Recruitment's it's just another sales job. You're selling people rather than selling commodities or advertising or anything like that. I just thought, could I work in construction? And that's where it started. That's where the whole thing started.
We're always, all of us, selling some aspect of ourselves or our value. I mean, that's how you are recruited in the first place. I mean, do you think the sales experience, in a funny kind of way, maybe you didn't realize it at the time, but do you think the sales experience almost helped you to package yourself up? Because you do have a very strong kind of identity.
I do. I think it helped me massively along the way. And I think when you're selling things to people, it's ruthless. And regardless of what you're selling, people just generally don't want to buy it. So your job is to convince someone they want to buy something. And I think, yeah, it helps me sell myself. Definitely. It helps me be more confident talking to people. It's just, I think when you've worked in an industry like sales, in a shop, selling online, selling people, it gives you that kind of confidence, which I might not have had otherwise.
What was either the hardest part of changing career for you from sort of sales and recruitment into construction, and what also has been the most sort of rewarding aspect of it?
Good question. It was hard. I think the unknown's always hard. I never considered being a crane operator, so it never entered my mind to ever do that. So I kind of had to question everything that I knew or that I thought about in life, really, and whether I could do it. Previous to this, only a few months before, I'd changed to a different recruitment company, which I really liked. And it was kind of like, do I give up something that I've just found a really nice company to work for, and do I start something new, which I don't really know whether I'll be any good at or if I can do or how far I'll go with it. It was a really hard decision to make. Do I want to be a salesperson forever or do I want to try something new?
Anthony, can you remember how you felt when you were thinking of changing career?
So for me, it was John Lewis doing comms, and I was having the time of my life. I was loving it and I was enjoying it, but I'd always wanted to perform since I was, you know, really, really young. And comms for me was a way of performing because it was telling stories. It was working with the community. It was kind of, it was playful in that sense. But then I was just getting to the point where I just wasn't happy. So the minute I made that decision to kind of really take the jump to really pursue a career I wanted to, it was a big sigh of relief, but it was also terrifying because it was this just big unknown kind of canyon in front of you. And especially where I'd been working for years, really kind of honing that craft and getting to a good respectable place, to then pretty much start from scratch.
You talked about taking the jump. Did you have work lined up as an actor? I mean, were the things that you were involved in, or did you take the jump just backing yourself and having the confidence to make it?
The latter. So I literally, I think I had quite a long notice period, and I started to try and figure out things to do, trying to get an agent at the start, which was pretty futile for the first 3 years, actually. But no, I pretty much left going, right, the only way to do it is to start from scratch, because you had to, as a performer, be available all the time at the drop of a hat. So working full time wouldn't and didn't allow me to try and pursue it. So I had to just kind of give up the ghost.
Kevin, you also have several strings to your bow, as I mentioned in the introduction. Sometimes we talk about the side hustle. You know, people have things that go on in their personal lives, hobbies, interests, aspirations. How easy or difficult has it been for you to sort of develop almost like a parallel career as a scriptwriter, which you're obviously very talented at?
Thank you. Writing, especially script writing, is something I've always done, but it's only been in the last few years I've started to make some headway with it, really. I made my first short film back in 2013, and that was, I've been writing for quite a few years before that, but I hadn't really had anything made at that point. And actually, it was the birth of my first child that made me realize that I needed to, if I didn't make something sooner rather than later, I would never make anything. And that's not saying having children puts an end to that. It's just, it was kind of realization that I now was the best time to do it. And as it happens, 2020 has probably been my best year for writing. A film we made back in late 2018, early 2019, we put it into festivals in late 2019, so just before COVID happened. When the pandemic took over, we decided to put the film online in March last year to get as many people as possible to watch it. And we made that film as a teaser for a TV series, and it's led to some really exciting conversations. With COVID-19 and everyone being at home, it's kind of been an ideal opportunity to get as many people to watch it as possible. And I think because everyone's been in the same boat, when you've got a passion for something, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always said that the two things I wanted in life was to be a writer and to have a family. And I've got a family now, and I'm getting somewhere with the writing side of things. It's one of those things that if I don't succeed in 10 years' time, I won't be finished. I'm going to keep doing it until I'm, you know, retired. You know, it's kind of like when you've got a passion for something, if you're really committed to it, you will eventually get somewhere with it, I think.
I think listening to you, I'm fairly convinced as well. And just to say that the film is called The Announcement, is that right? Can you just tell us a little bit about The Announcement for anyone who's not aware of what it's about?
The Announcement was something we filmed in January last year. The world was a fairly normal place, and then everything closed down, which meant we were able to edit it and try and put it into some festivals. And it's been really pleasing how well it's gone down, really. It's got a well-known comedy cast in it. So it stars Hugo Chegwin from People Just Do Nothing, Felicity Montague, who played Lynn in Alan Partridge most famously, and David Schall, who I'd worked with before on Roundheads and Cavaliers, and also has been in The Inbetweeners and The Office. So having that recognisable cast has really helped propel it online and get it into festivals, and it's won a few awards. So hopefully I'm going to be able to use that as a calling card going forward as well.
Well, congratulations on that. I when I first knew you, you were managing intranets and websites in the corporate world. So that is really fantastic to hear how you've developed that skill and that talent and the background. I just wanted to ask Anthony, was there something that was a really kind of strong motivating factor for you to get into acting and puppetry and the sort of creative arts?
There was a lot of personal stuff going on, sort of in the background, kind of relationship stuff that was kind of shifting and guiding. But actually, the biggest thing was that I was going to be turning 30 in a matter of like 1 or 2 years. And I had big lofty ideas when I was younger that by the time I was sort of 30, I'd at least be doing what I loved doing. And I was loving what I was doing, but it wasn't my passion at all. So it was that awfully kind of phrased, you know, not midlife crisis, but, you know, mid-20 crisis, where it was like, oh no, the world's going to end when I get to 30. So I've got to make sure I, you know, get some stuff out of the way. So for me, it was that kind of little bit of personal life pushed by the fact that this big unattainable age was coming.
What was the hardest part for you about changing career, sector or industry?
Early on, you quickly realise that there's not many women who do this. So I was, you know, the first female lifting technician apprentice we put through. You're in this massive bit of machinery. And okay, we're in a lot of open fields because I went to college in Norfolk, but it just felt really powerful, really scary, really daunting. And when I went up a tower crane, I absolutely went to pieces the first time. It wasn't good until I got up there. And I remember I got halfway up the ladder, because it's all ladders to climb up a tower crane. And as you know, I got to the middle and the ladder shook a little bit. And at that point, I freaked out. I completely paled out. I could feel, you know, in panic, deep panic sets in. I could feel the blood draining from my face, and I was clinging onto this ladder, and I actually felt like I was going to pass out. And I thought, I've either got to go up the ladder or come down the ladder, because otherwise I'm just going to fall off the ladder. I decided to go up to the top, made it, and then just kind of lied on the floor for a little while recouping. And that was my first experience with a tower crane.
The hardest thing for me about that big career change was financials. You know, I was earning a good wage. It was consistent. I probably wasn't as frugal as I should have been. I owned a flat at the time. I had to sell that. Did all those big kind of things. And it was like, bam, living with mum and dad again. So I was like, this has got to be temporary. It's got to be short term. So I've got to push. So it was going from being completely independent to having to then, you know, ask for handouts from family just to keep me going just enough. And I did that for about 9 months. And then luckily I got my first big gig, which was Warhorse at the time, which was really, you know, for me, that was quite a feat. And I had no agent either. It was all just off my own back. And I'd been grafting and kind of grifting, doing, like I said, like kind of side jobs. I started working at drama school, teaching drama, started working at a theatre bar, you know, all these little things just to try and get somewhere. Then I think up until now, the pandemic, the best thing about what I've been able to achieve is the variety of people that I've met. I tried to count it recently, the kind of the cities, the countries, the places I've been to on jobs has just been phenomenal. Like in that 10 years, I've traveled so much, and all with work, which is even more incredible, you know, basically traveling on someone else's dime.
I think you're now giving all of our listeners, including me, some serious career and job envy. Kevin, if I could turn to you, how have you just balanced the job you do at Akamar Films, the script writing and family life?
I love my day job, and it does give me a lot of satisfaction. The side hustle of script writing, finding time to do that was a bit limiting. Some people write on a commute. When you're in a packed train standing up for 2 hours, script writing isn't something that's that achievable. When we had to start working from home full time, I didn't suddenly think, oh, I've got loads more time to write now. But I didn't have that 2 hour commute every day. And it did mean once I finished my working day, I was able to see my kids more and see my wife more. And I didn't feel as guilty that I would then spend the evenings writing. That side of things has been really, really helpful. A lot of people, well, everyone's been in the same boat since March last year. And a lot of productions have shut down or haven't kicked on. and it has meant a lot of people in the industry have had more time to watch and read things. Having two short films available online in the last 12 months has allowed me to have introductory chats to a lot of people in the industry that I previously wouldn't have been able to, or I would have been waiting for a year to speak to them. But suddenly now I can pop in a meeting at 6 o'clock in the evening on Zoom with someone and do everything I need to do and pitch things and chat to people and network.
In terms of that sort of entrepreneurial spirit, so all of you on the call today have had to have a certain kind of entrepreneurialism to either change career or keep these sort of side careers and interests going.
I think probably this period gave people a lot of time to think and give them a lot of time to look into themselves and kind of question what they do, you know, because when you take someone out of the office environment, I guess they sit there at home and they think, is this really what I want to do with my life? Am I really enjoying what I'm doing? Could I do something else? And I think curiosity probably at the moment gets to a lot of people. And I've seen a lot of different startups and a lot of really interesting things going up. But so maybe it is the period for change. Maybe this is the catalyst that will push people into changing career or looking into something different or retraining, reskilling. And I think it's probably a good time for it. And I think a lot of companies are now open to people who want to reskill and retrain and do apprenticeships.
Anthony, I wanted to ask you about the arts, actually, just in general.
The arts world is very slowly creeping open. You can tell companies are scared to commit to things because of so much uncertainty, and they don't want to lose money. It's the end of the day. End of the day, the arts in all elements of it is a business. So, which is one hand sad, but it's also very true. You know, you can be creative, you can be have an imagination, you can tell stories, you can write beautiful pieces of work, you can make music, but there's still that undertone of it's a business, and it's there to make money as well as entertain.
What either gets you out of bed in the morning, or what inspires you?
When it's the thing that inspires me most to turn on the laptop in the morning is being able to be creative and share it with the world. So especially with my day job, looking after social media for a much loved children's TV show, looking after the social media for Bing, we're usually only a couple of clicks away from a parent or a carer telling us how much of an impact our show has had on their children's lives. And that never stops being rewarding. So we're really in a privileged position to see the impact our show and our project is having on people's lives. So that always inspires me to carry that on and spreading that joy, so to speak. When I was younger, I used to kind of dread the Monday to Friday because, you know, it's back to work. But now me and my wife have a thing where we say, you might hear something this week. It's kind of like a catchphrase in our house. So I kind of look forward to the Monday now because everyone's back working again, and I might hear from a producer or a channel or a production company that they want to work with me collaboratively. So that kind of inspires me to get out of bed, especially on a Monday morning. It's like, oh, I've got 5 days where I might hear something. I've been writing for over a decade, and that anticipation that this life-changing event might happen never fails to, you know, get me out of bed in the morning.
I found so much joy and fun in going talking to school kids and putting a message out there and going and doing talks for companies and going and doing talks at expos and planning for these. And I really, really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that, especially the kids. I love going talking to kids and doing assemblies and spending my time that kind of way. And it was the same when I operated a crane, to be honest. I love getting out of bed, going to work, doing my job really well, and going home again. And of course, getting paid, but that always helped. But I think since COVID, when COVID hit, it really took the wind out of my sails. Obviously, schools didn't want to see me anymore. Events weren't happening. And I really lost myself for a while. And I wasn't posting on social media and things because I didn't quite think what I did and what I stood for didn't seem as important anymore. There were bigger things going on in the world. You know, people were dying. How am I going to go? Oh, yes, you know, operate cranes, apprenticeships. It just didn't seem important anymore. And that really, I really struggled with that for a while. And it really took the wind out of my sails. And I didn't really quite know where to place myself. And it's probably only in the last few months where I've kind of got that big drive back again. I think I just thrive off constantly moving forward and doing something and learning a new skill. I think that's what kind of pushes me forward and gives me that edge.
Only this year, so only since January 2021, have I had any auditions. And obviously they've all been virtual. But for me, 2020 was the longest time I've been since starting a performance career professionally. What was that, back in 2011? It's been the longest I've had without any work, without any auditions. Even my side hustles, I couldn't even do, because I teach puppetry, I teach physical theatre, all the things that you could possibly do online, but it's really quite naff to do online. So they've all stopped, they've all ground to halt. So I have, luckily, here's a little bit of a nugget for you. As of yesterday, I signed a contract for a job starting in June to November, which is great. I get to perform again. I don't think I can say what it is just yet, but it's a UK tour of a show. But it's been a long time coming. You were saying, Kevin, you know, kind of, what will this week bring? What will I hear? It's been that, which has been lovely. It's like good juice in your veins. It's kind of, even though it's stressful, it's nice to be waiting to hear for something, you know.
I've certainly caught a little bit of the creative bug and some of the entrepreneurial spirit that's going round or hanging in the air right now. I unexpectedly found myself between jobs recently, and I decided to learn a new skill, which was podcasting. Kevin, I really like your catchphrase of "you might hear something this week," because I can sort of say that applies to me now as well, because I've been really enjoying podcasting as an outlet to reconnect with people, to tell stories. So if I can ask you about social media in terms of promoting your work and projects, I think one of the things we should provide as a public service in Comms from the Shed is some little hints and tips for people. In part one of the Career Change special, Andrew McCaskill, who works with a lot of executive leaders on career change, gave us some great hints and tips. But can I just ask you about social media to promote your work and your projects? What have you found has been effective? What kind of things have you learned along the way in terms of do's and don'ts?
I've definitely learned that, especially with kind of Twitter and Instagram, you are kind of putting yourself out there as a brand, really, which is kind of a horrible way to think of it. But, you know, if you're kind of building up a perception in people's minds about who you are, and if you're promoting your work constantly and then you suddenly tweet about a complaint to British Gas, for example, it's not the best way of promoting who you are as a creative. So I would say be mindful that who your audience is. Be sure to kind of curate a following of similarly minded people. And I mean, social media has been very, very beneficial for me. Speaking as someone who had no connections at all with the industry, my second short film, Roundheads and Cavaliers, which was from 2018, that film wouldn't exist without Twitter, basically, because I had the script ready, but I didn't have any actors or anyone in mind. And I put a tweet out a year or so before that I was looking for a director for a comedy. And a couple of directors got in touch with me, and one of them was Chloe Thomas, who had directed Horrible Histories in the past and had won BAFTAs. And suddenly I was talking to her on Twitter about making one of my projects. You know, we made the film and we're working on a series now, and that wouldn't have existed unless I hadn't put that tweet out in the first place. And it's definitely led, I mean, I've LinkedIn as well. I've managed to make connections on LinkedIn to producers and people in production companies. The beautiful thing is that most people who work in the media have social media presence. It only takes you to message someone to say how much you like their work, which is also a good tip. It's kind of like, you know, reach out to the people who you admire, tell them how much you love their work, and then build up a rapport that way, and then say, oh, by the way, I'm a writer myself, can I share some scripts with you? And I've learned how kind and generous people are in the industry. You just have to go for it again. You have to just get in touch with people. Don't be afraid to put yourself on the line, really.
You know, crane operating is quite interesting. So I think that comes with its own side of followers. So I've probably been quite lucky. And for some reason on LinkedIn, I'm far more popular than anywhere else that I operate. So LinkedIn, I think I've got over 20,000 followers now, which is very strange. And I don't put too much thought into it. That's the truth of it. I think the do's and don'ts is you have to be authentic about what you do. I think people read very quickly into I want to say bullshit. it's a good solid word. I think people read into that pretty quickly and they see through that. So I try to steer away from making up situations that will achieve me the maximum amount of likes. I tend to just talk about what I know, what I've done, where I've been, what I've seen, and give some insight on that. But it's personal insight. It's not me spending hours on Google trying to act like I'm far more intelligent or anything than I am. It's just my thoughts around what's happening. And I think that's the biggest thing, it's being authentic. And I do think people see through that very quickly. You know, I think we're all seeing through influencers at the moment. I think they're getting a bit of a hard time of it. You know, influencers were the be all and they were at the top. And I think we're all seeing through it and we're all seeing that it's not all as nice as they make out that it is. And, you know, everyone's struggling at the moment and things can't always be that good. You've got to talk about the bad stuff as well as the good stuff.
And actually on that kind of doom scrolling idea is that I realized something recently is that I'd been using my Twitter account for more kind of, you know, kind of activist stuff, you know, seeing the terrible mess our country's in certain areas politically and but I realized I've just been churning out a lot of that stuff. And then I went and looked at my own profile and saw my retweets and things. And I thought, oh, if I was a casting agent or if I was a thing and they come to look at my Twitter, I wonder what they'd make of that. So there's that element of, ooh, you know, you want to be yourself on social media, but then sometimes you've got to be quite a bit more kind of careful and creative with how you present yourself. And like Kevin said, that you have to present yourself as a brand. Well, social media has been the end of certain people's careers, especially in the last couple of years, where people are taking a more serious stance at how we talk and treat each other. And so on the one hand, if you do put everything out there, that you'll get it in return because that's what you put out. So it's a real balancing act.
I'm very visual, so I love photos. I think photos are the strongest thing we can use on social media by far. I mean, I love Instagram. Instagram's my absolute favourite because it's all images. But even on LinkedIn, the posts that do the best on LinkedIn for me are the ones with the most spectacular pictures, the ones where there's big cranes or I'm sat in a crane at work or there's some machinery or a construction site or there's something interesting because the picture draws people in regardless of what you write. It's the picture that hits people first. If you just write something, the chances are people aren't really going to look at it, to be honest. And especially if it's too wordy. I've noticed people don't like things that are too wordy. Well, I don't. I'll go, oh yeah, we'll come back to that later. And I might not have time for it. So I want a quick read. I want to sit down for 2 minutes. I might be interested, but I think to be initially drawn in, it's definitely imagery for me.
Is it true that you once persuaded someone to become a crane operator, a female crane operator, based on a sort of chance meeting in a pet shop?
Yeah, it was very random. I was in a pet shop. I keep fancy goldfish, so I was in looking at goldfish one weekend. And I was up at the till, and there was this girl there, and she was like, oh, you... Katie, she'd seen me on Instagram, the crane operator on Instagram. And I said, yeah, I am, yeah. And she was like, oh, I think I'd like to be a tower crane operator. I was like, really? She was like, yeah, I think I might enjoy that. And I was like, oh, well, message me. Drop me a message on Instagram and we can have a chat about it. And now she's a tower. She works for our company. She is a tower crane operator. But it was just, very chance meeting of someone who'd seen the work Instagram page that I set up. Very random.
I understand that the female crane operators, that you were in touch with each other. Do you keep in touch with other women in construction?
We do. So I moderate a group on Facebook called Women on the Tools, which is part of On the Tools, which is a massive, massive group now. And it's a really nice way of keeping women in construction together. And there's no guys in there, so it is just us. And it's almost like a safe space that gives people room to air anything that's going on. And you know, sometimes people are asking questions about legislations or you know, laws, and can they do this, and should their bosses be doing that. And it's just a real safe place where people can air things, and that's really good. Me and the girls, our crane operators, we don't keep in touch as much as we should probably. We do, we're all friendly with each other, and I like to think that if anyone needed anything, they know where I am, and they can always drop me a message or get in contact.
Now, obviously, we're living through very unusual and unexpected times, I think it's fair to say. None of us really saw this coming. But what would your advice be to anybody who's thinking of changing career to something quite different to what they do at the moment?
My advice would probably be, if it's something you love doing, if it's something that brings you joy, if it's something that excites you and gives you an impetus to kind of drive, you just got to go for it. And you go for it knowing that there are different levels of success. So for me, it was never, I never expected to be in the West End within 9 months of leaving my corporate job, but I did it. That was a big jump. But I, at the time, I gave myself small measures of success. It was like getting a show in a pub, or, you know, being something that has a poster in the Underground, all these little different levels. So if you have the passion to do something and you love doing it, there shouldn't be any reason why you're not doing it. You should literally, and it's so easier said than done. I know we've got families, we've got commitment, we've got finances. But if you've got the good support network around you and they love you like you love them, they'll support you in whatever that may be, you know? So I think you've just got to, you've got to trust your instinct and follow what you love doing, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, like you can do a 9-to-5 and you can get some cash in your pocket, but if at the end of the day you're kind of feeling a little bit empty, what are you waiting for? And it sounds so cheesy saying it, but it's true. It's really true. I've got friends who I've watched them kind of question their loves and their tastes, and it's like, just go for it. Like the longer you kind of mull over it, it's not going to happen any sooner. But then, like I said, you've really got to give yourself different levels of measures of success.
When I was looking to make my first short film, there was a writer and director who I really admired called Paul Andrew Williams, and he's directed things in the past like London to Brighton, and he's gone on to direct some TV shows. He's a really, really talented guy. And I messaged him. I think we was doing a Kickstarter campaign at the time, and I was trying to get him to share it on social media. And he did, and he just messaged me back and said, make it no matter what, basically. And that kind of resonated a lot with me. And a lot of people say it's easier than ever now to go out and make things. It's easy, you know, if you've got a phone, you can make a film, or if you've got a microphone, you can make an album, that kind of thing, which is fair enough. But I think people are often turned off because they're perfectionists, and if it's not perfect, then they're not interested. But, and similar to what Anthony was saying, I think you, if you don't attempt something, you won't fail, but you'll never have any success either. Before I worked in communications, I worked in shipping for 4 years, and I worked in insurance, and I hated it. I hated it. It didn't give me any creative joy or delight at all. And I got my first job in communications off the back of a music review that I'd written. I hadn't gone to university or anything. And I gave the person who was hiring this job a music review I'd written, and I got the job working in communication. So it was funny that oh, you know, I can do something that I like. And that's what's kind of kept me going all along, really.
Well, as somebody that's written a few music reviews myself, I actually found that really inspiring to listen to. So thank you very much for that. That's quite a journey from shipping to insurance to writing and television. I want to now talk about comfort and the things that have been bringing our guests comfort during the pandemic. And it could be TV, it could be music, books, arts, fitness, food. But what's been your go-to thing for comfort in the lockdown?
Spending more time with my wife and my children has been the ultimate comfort during lockdown. And we actually, had a baby in September as well. So having a newborn baby to cuddle is always lovely and will always be a joy, because if the world was normal last year, after 2 weeks, I would have been back at work 5 days a week and not seeing them as much. So it's been a real blessing spending this much time with them. But in terms of other comforts, you know, Netflix and Disney Plus continue to be a real benefit. You know, Disney Plus launching during a global lockdown, genius idea. Particularly shows like Schitt's Creek, which I think everyone seemed to have binge watched during lockdown. Podcasts have been great as well. They've carried on. Some new ones have sprung up, like this very podcast here. Being able to have more time to play more music, play more guitar, that kind of thing. You know, being limited to where you can go, exploring the local area has been, there's parts of my town where I lived that we didn't know existed until we were restricted to walking around it. Suddenly we found these beautiful little spots nearby, which was really lovely that we keep going back to.
Yeah, see, when I was first put on, so I was on furlough for a while, and I do a bit of art and I paint and I things when I get time, and I was doing a bit of that and I was really enjoying it. And then, like I said to you, I kind of lost a lot of will to do anything, to be honest, after that. And I couldn't place myself. The best thing we did was back in March when the first lockdown happened. This random dog turned up to see my dad in Ireland, and we found out that it had been around for a month and it had probably been dumped in the area, and he took it home. And that was honestly the best thing. He's been amazing. He really helped.
I think the biggest source of comfort during the last year has to be BBC Radio 2 and BBC Radio 6 music. Because I love music. I listen to music pretty much all day long. Love a bit of Ken Bruce, 9:30 to 12. Love a bit of Sean McKinney in the afternoon on Radio 6. Like, for me, it's music has been the biggest comfort. When the pandemic started, I was actually on tour on a show. I was actually in Moscow when it happened and I had to come home. The show got cancelled. And I had nowhere to go because I haven't owned or been in a place since probably 2017. So I had to come home to Milton Keynes to my mum and dad's house. So that was a real big shock, because that was, again, like I did 10 years ago, you know, give everything up and have to come home. I had the same thing happen. So I really needed sources of comfort. And so one was obviously my family. And then another real source of comfort, which is actually quite a recent one, is I, for Christmas, got given a VR headset. It's called Oculus Quest 2. And it's kind of a little wireless one. The best source of comfort is there's an app on here called Wonder, and it uses Google Maps and it plops you right in the middle of a street view, and you can turn around, and sometimes the quality is not great, but you can literally stand in the middle of a street, a city, a town square, and then you can move along on street view and it takes you there. And I kid you not, it was I'm getting a bit emotional now. It was quite emotional to just plop myself in somewhere that I'd been before that I loved and have a look around, because obviously you can't at the moment. So that was a royal sense of comfort.
I've discovered all kinds of beautiful little parks and walkways and paths and roads not taken previously. So it's been fantastic to discover all these new parts of the local area. I'd like to finish up with a question which we've been asking all of our guests in the shed, which is, can you tell us one unusual fact about yourself that no one listening would know?
Yeah, I think the safest answer is probably a more of a PG one, which would be I've got a bit of a puppet collection. I buy them, find them, tinker with them. I've got a few marionettes. I've got a Jim Henson style Muppet with a hand and rod. But my favourite puppet is one that I made myself, which I've tried to make more of myself. But I made it out of my Wellington sock from my last trip to Glastonbury. So it's one of those big, thick socks, and it's a sock puppet. And I even gave him opposable arms that you control with a wire hanger clips and I googly eyes, and I sewed his mouth so that it fits into my fingers so that I can get really good articulation. So I've got this creepy collection of homemade puppets upstairs and a few store-bought ones as well.
I was on a show called BBC Fight Box, which you probably never heard of. So this was, oh God, this was many moons ago. So I was probably in my teens, late teens when I went on there. So I'm heavily into gaming, which probably a lot of people I work with don't know. So I'm heavily into collecting retro games consoles. I have a massive collection that spans probably over 20 years. I mean, I was scanning in my games recently and I'm only halfway through and I probably got about 850. So I've got like a huge collection of retro items. It's not just games consoles, it's retro everything. I'm a bit of a geek like that. But and I ended up on this show called BBC Fight Box, and it was a very strange concept show. It was with Trevor Nelson and Lisa Snowden, and you had like a 3D gaming arena, and on TV it looks like these gaming characters are in the middle of this arena fighting it out and doing all these different things, but in reality there's nothing there, it's just empty and there's a crowd of people who cheer it on. But yeah, I think that's probably one of them things that people would never know about me. And it, funny enough, I was always looking for the episodes. I never saw it on TV, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And about 6 months ago, it got uploaded to YouTube, which was a bit random. So I managed to watch it, and my mum and dad watched it. It's cringy as hell, but it's quite nice to see it after all these years.
My first job was dressing up as the Pink Panther at school fetes when I was about 14. I got paid, by the way. I didn't just turn up as a Pink Panther. The guy who lived over the road, I was best mates with his son. And my best mate was Sylvester the Cat and I was the Pink Panther. I used to walk around fates and we got paid £10 for that. And I did that many times. And that was my first job.
Do you think that was somehow a slightly spooky forerunner to the world of Bing and children's entertainment? I think possibly that path was signposted for you, Kevin. I don't know if you've ever reflected on that.
Yeah, well, I guess in a way it could be, yeah, because we have Bing costume characters as well, and I've been to meet and greets with Bing. I mean, before I started working with Bing, I queued up with my daughter and my pregnant wife to meet Bing in a car park in Basildon, and there's so much joy on kids' faces meeting Bing. So I guess it was my performance as the Pink Panther, I guess, was a forerunner to that. Like it was a very cheap knockoff version of the Pink Panther. And I learned the biggest rule was don't take your head off in public, because that can traumatise children.
I think we've no desire to traumatise any children on Comms from the Shed. I want to thank all three of you for your time. Thanks for joining our Career Change Special Part 2 podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of Comms from the Shed. Hit subscribe if you want to know when new episodes are available, or check out our Instagram page for the latest updates.